On the program today, Cleveland, not the one where the political spectacle is this week, the other one where the economic reality is all the time. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Ryssdal. It is Monday, the 18th of July. Great, as always, to have you along, everybody. And here we are, day one, the GOP convention in Cleveland, Ohio. It has been, you might say, a raucous afternoon inside the Quicken Loans Arena with an ultimately unsuccessful attempt to open up a discussion of the rules governing this convention and the gathering in 2020, for that matter. But this is a program on business and economics, and only a half an hour one at that. So it gets us to this. There is reporting today that the man who built the modern Republican political media movement in this country and the company that embodies it is on his way out. Gabriel Sherman, the national affairs editor at New York Magazine and the author of a biography of that man, Fox News chief Roger Ailes, reports today that Rupert Murdoch and his sons have decided that in the wake of a sexual harassment lawsuit against Ailes, it is time for him to go. We got Gabe Sherman on Skype from the GOP convention in Cleveland. Gabe, thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
What do you know about this? You've been talking to, I guess, three people, yeah?
Yes, this is a very fast-moving situation. The Murdoch family has decided that, based on what they've learned in this sexual harassment investigation conducted in the wake of Gretchen Carlson's lawsuit, that Roger Ailes should be replaced as the powerful head of Fox News. Now, the real debate inside the company is how and when that rollout happens, but the decision has been made that he needs to be moved aside.
And it is happening. It is breaking, actually, in the middle of the biggest GOP event in the past 4 years.
Yeah, that is a remarkable turn of events. You know, the debate taking place is really how this decision gets announced. Do they announce it during the GOP convention, which is a massive media moment, or do they wait and try to announce it after the convention during a slower news cycle? And really, that's where things stand at this point.
There is, in your article, not only this news, which is amazing enough, but some insight as to the culture at the company that Roger Ailes has built, the culture inside Fox News.
Yes, you know, I report that the sexual harassment investigation being conducted by the law firm Paul Weiss has moved from the Fox News offices on 6th Avenue in Midtown Manhattan over to the Paul Weiss law firm's office because there's a concern that employees would not be forthright because the lawyers fear that Roger Ailes has bugged the office. Now, we should point out there's a sort of a grand irony here because Roger Ailes got his start in politics in 1968 working for Richard Nixon on his presidential campaign as this media television advisor. So there's some symmetry here that Roger Ailes has ended his career really where he began it.
The company is also saying, just speaking of things we should point out, the company is saying the investigation is not complete, no decisions have been made. But even that being the case, it bears a mention that Roger Ailes makes Rupert Murdoch a boat full of money.
Yes, Fox News is, by some accounts, the single most profitable division of Rupert Murdoch's media empire. It's responsible for upwards of 30% of 21st Century Fox's operating profit. Though I should point out, as I've also reported, the Murdoch family takes some solace in the fact that Roger Ailes was out last year for some extended health leaves. And during his absence, they saw that Fox News was able to continue operating and they did not see any material declines in ratings or profits. So that, I think, has given them confidence that they could move against Ailes and not hurt the bottom line.
There will be palace intrigue aplenty if this actually comes to pass as to who succeeds Roger Ailes. What I want to know from you, though, is what does this say about the future influence of Fox News, not even arguably one of the most influential media organizations in the country?
Well, you know, I think it would be impossible to really see anybody succeeding Ailes with the level of influence he's had in the Republican Party. He understands the passions and the emotions of the Republican electorate. And Fox News, during his 19 years atop the network, became the megaphone for a certain style of Republican politics. Without him running it, it's hard to see how Fox News occupies that space. And we're already seeing some diminution. You know, CNN has become a vocal player this cycle. They've hired Corey Lewandowski, Donald Trump's former campaign manager. So we're already seeing Fox's influence in Republican politics on the decline.
Gabriel Sherman is the national affairs editor at New York Magazine. His excellent book about Roger Ailes' rise is called, which we spoke to him about on this program, is called The Loudest Voice in the Room. Gabe, thanks very much.
Thank you.
It is rare one can call the floor of the New York Stock Exchange relaxed in comparison to almost anything, but traders today were practically sleepwalking compared to the delegates in Cleveland. All three major indices finished to the upside. 21st Century Fox unchanged, interestingly enough. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. A reminder as I set up this next story that correlation is not causality. The Japanese telecommunications company SoftBank, yes, not a bank, but a telecommunications company, it is buying the British company Arm Holdings. It makes chip technology that is probably in your smartphone, among a whole bunch of other places. The $32 billion deal follows the British vote to leave the European Union, and sure, currency traders have been busy with the falling British pound, but SoftBank says Brexit was not a factor in the timing of this arrangement. Cheap currency can be nice for deal makers, yes, but there is a whole lot more to consider, as Marketplace's Mark Garrison explains now from New York.
If you want to understand this, forget about multi-billion dollar deals and just think about your own wallet. A fall in the pound may make it cheaper for you to travel to London, but you're probably not going to buy a $1,000 plane ticket just because your dollar goes a little bit further. If you've already been considering the trip, maybe now you might actually do it. For companies, it's similar. A cheap pound isn't reason enough on its own to do a deal.
That obviously will factor into your decision, but it's not going to make you jump off the cliff. It might get you a little closer to it.
That's Donna Hitcherich, Columbia Business School professor and former investment banker. Also keep in mind that Arm is a special kind of British company. Samantha Tomaszczyk is with merger and acquisitions tracking firm Deal Reporter in London.
When we look at the company's revenues itself, a lot of them come from outside the UK. So the UK exposure in this particular scenario wasn't particularly great.
But many British companies make a lot of their money in Britain, which means potential buyers have deeper worries about Brexit's impact. Sal Fira, managing partner at Grant Thornton, says those fears can outweigh any benefit of a cheap pound.
The other element of this uncertainty in the marketplace of what the impact of the UK economic environment is going to be. Ultimately, is the UK going to spin into a recession?
The money foreign companies have spent acquiring UK companies is already down nearly 40% from the same period last year, according to Dealogic. Despite the cheap currency, a deal still has to make sense overall. And many deals may be on hold until the UK's future relationship with Europe takes shape. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
Back in Cleveland for a second now, and the idea that what happens inside a political convention hall will eventually matter to those of us on the outside. That's the general idea behind our new pop-up podcast that we're going to be offering this week for the GOP convention and next week for the Democrats in Philadelphia. It's called Politics Inside Out. It's the brainchild of our new Washington bureau chief, Andrea Seabrook. We've got her on the line from Cleveland. Hey, Andrea.
Hey, Kai.
We have gotten you clearly inside the arena. Give us the thesis of this pop-up podcast, would you, and the coverage we're doing from there, inside, outside.
Sure. I'm inside the convention right now here in Cleveland. But what we're doing is covering it from the inside and the outside, not just sort of what the insider platform will be on the economy and so on, but also how it affects people outside and really in our economy and in politics today, who the insiders and the outsiders are.
Have you been running around outside the Quicken Loans arena there? I mean, who is on the outside looking in on this thing and what do they tell you?
It's really fascinating. All around the convention center, there are people who are either, you know, doing stand-up acts in the street to make money off of the extra crowd, or you have a lot of protesters, too, walking around with big signs that say Black Lives Matter and so on, walking up to people in sidewalk cafes who are obviously convention goers and sort of holding their signs in people's faces. So it's interesting.
Give me the insiders then. You've talked to people, I'm sure, on the floor or around the arena today. What are they saying?
They're saying a lot of people say that they love Trump. I talked to a few members of Congress who one of them, Joe Wilson from South Carolina, said he was my fifth choice.
Oh.
But now that he's the actual nominee, well, I love him and he's my choice. You know, I talked to a lot of people who maybe had, you know, problems with him in the beginning. But, you know, this is a party of party loyalty, this convention. And so people are falling into line as much as I can tell.
Do me a favor and look around from where you are and talk to me about the signage. You know, the corporate signage that is sometimes around in conventions where you see refreshments and sales and all that jazz. Is there any of that going on in the Quicken Loans arena?
Oh, yeah. There's a whole convention center. The Republican National Committee, for the first time, brought in small businesses, you know, single person owned, no chains, to sell things like, you know, glittering elephant watches and special purses, handmade purses with giant elephants on them and Reagan and so on. So
there's no big corporate signage at that arena? I mean, we're not seeing the Coca-Colas and the McDonald's and the Fujifilms and the UPSs?
I know, it's weird, huh? There's a lot of signage for press organizations. It's, you know, CNN and C-SPAN and even NPR, PBS NewsHour. You know, that's what you see inside here.
Do me a favor, before I let you go, give me the schedule for the Pop-Up Podcast. We're going to do one every day, right?
Yeah, Kai. Aside from, you know, our first priority always, which is Marketplace and our listeners, we are also putting out an extra podcast every single night after the convention closes. So by, you know, 4 a.m. the next morning, which really has an immediate take, an immediate view of the scene from the convention, from outside the convention, and not just, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid, but telling it from all sides.
Andrea Seabrook is our brand new Washington, D.C. bureau chief. She is, as I think you can probably hear, inside the arena with a really loud band in Cleveland, Ohio. She'll be there for us all week. And then again, we should say in Philadelphia the next week. Our podcast that she is running for us is called Politics Inside Out. Andrea, we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks so much.
Coming up.
If you're really going to look at poverty, you have to start looking at greed.
The other Cleveland straight ahead, the one in Mississippi. But first, let's do the numbers. Small gains, but more records. The Dow Industrial's up 16 points, less than a tenth percent, 18,533. Yeah, that's a record. The S&P 500 brought home 5 points, a quarter percent, 2166, another record. The NASDAQ up 26 points, a half percent, 5,055. Yeah, no, not a record. All right, let's start with some earnings, shall we? Optimists ruled the regular trading day for Netflix. Shares up 0.4% before the bell, and then came that earnings report. High costs and weak subscriber growth pushed the stock down 15%. Yahoo, in what might, stress might, be its last quarterly report before a sale, climbed 0.6% in regular trading, but after yet another disappointing quarter, stop me if you've heard this before, the stock down after the bell. Bonds up a smidge, the yield on the 10-year T-note down to 1.58%. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. So, that political thing happening in Cleveland, Ohio this week. It is a big deal, yes, and we will have people there covering the economic policy amid all the politicking. But we're also covering the economy in this election a different way as well. Our project with Frontline and PBS NewsHour is called How the Deck is Stacked, the issues behind all the stump speeches we've been hearing. Today, picking up our story from this past Friday, race, poverty, and economic mobility in Cleveland, Mississippi.
Fact is that we're not doing what we should be doing in this country to deal with this problem.
That was Bobby Kennedy near Cleveland on his 1967 tour of the Mississippi Delta, a tour that shocked Kennedy into action, and during which he met Catherine Wilson, then a teenager, today a 68-year-old woman still living deep in poverty, who says, yeah, life is better today, but she's still not satisfied.
I want to see action.
You want to see action?
Progress. Better than it was 50 years ago.
Jimmy Williams owns a local restaurant. He has lived in Cleveland all of his 70 years. We talked for a bit, and then he took me for a drive just to show me around.
So we are still divided to a certain extent.
Do you feel it? You feel it every day?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
The divide was actually physical at one point. Railroad tracks running smack through the center of town. Those tracks are gone, but the divide, not so much.
When you cross the track, it's much different than daylight and dark.
This is literally the other side of the tracks.
Yeah.
And that divide is perhaps even starker in the statistics. As we told you Friday, the unemployment rate for black residents of Cleveland, Mississippi is 4 times higher than for whites. Median income is half. And so we pick up today where those two sides meet.
Tell me where we are right now. What is this place?
This is downtown Cleveland, Mississippi. Cotton Row, Sharp Street.
Linda Stringfellow works for the nonprofit group AmeriCorps Vista in Cleveland on the front lines of poverty, as she likes to say.
In the area that you are walking on, this is where the railroad track.
This divided the town, east and west, right?
Yes. In Delta Town, still today, rivers and railroad tracks divide. You go over a river or a railroad track, you'll see the difference automatically in the economy, the housing, the businesses. You'll see the difference.
Because it's African Americans on one side and whites on the other.
Pretty much. Have not. Money. No money.
You grew up around here, right?
In the Delta, yes. Yeah. Born and raised.
Well, it's all kind of one big place, right?
Kind of. It depends on what water tank you drink from.
What did it look like around here when you were growing up?
We didn't know that we were poor. If you said we were poor, it was just like asking a fish, how does that water feel? The fish is going to say, what water? Because that's the only environment they've ever known. If you had a pair of Levi's, you had something. And if you had a pair of Converse, oh, you really had something.
Is it better today than it used to be?
No, it's about the same.
What is it about this place that makes poverty and inequality and that conversation so stuck?
Because you're going to start touching on tradition. You're going to start talking about mindset. You're going to start talking about family values that were passed down beside recipes. If you're really going to look at poverty, you have to start looking at greed. Are these structures set up from greed? Does greed stimulate poverty?
You mean I got what I have, and I'm not giving it to you?
That's right. It's your distribution of wealth. If you're not at the table, you become the meal. When we talk about change, you would love to see change, but you're trying to bring about change on old traditional structures that haven't changed. So it's just like me trying to build a mansion on top of a shaky foundation, or a foundation that was designed on greed so that you will always have poverty. Upper, lower.
And black and white.
Black and white.
Economic mobility in the Mississippi Delta isn't just lower than anywhere else in the country. It's lower than anywhere else in the developed world. Where you're born socioeconomically is where you're going to stay socioeconomically.
It was a wonderful place to grow up. As a child, I grew up in a neighborhood with lots of other kids riding their bicycles. We had a local park here. We had camps. I mean, it's really a wonderful place to grow up.
Mike Carr is a lawyer in Cleveland, one of the public defenders here in town. He grew up doing all right. Two parents at home. He's white. He lived on the west side of town.
Is it something that is a topic of conversation in this town at all? Across the races?
You talking about with blacks and whites sitting down and talking to each other about it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm never going to figure this.
A bunch of whites sitting around talking together
about
it.
I'm talking about blacks and whites sitting down and talking about race and poverty together. Because I'm never going to figure this out in a week in this town.
I understand.
Coming in from L.A.
I understand.
Right? So the question to you, as a guy who's born and bred here,
yeah,
is this a conversation you all have?
There's some people that I can have it with. Some people I can't. I think our generation, and when I say our generation, people born in the 80s and on, people who've been going to school together, if you went to public school, which I did, and you've been together for 35 years or whatnot, I've got friends, black friends, that I can be open, honest, and frank about everything with. And they're the same with me. But there's a generation before, and certainly two generations before, that will never change. That generation, I believe, is just going to have to live the rest of their lives and die out.
What do you do, though, until that happens? How do you keep young people around? How do you bet on the future?
Hi, Shakita, around, please. Hi.
Chiquita Fountain works for a group in Cleveland called Parents for Public School. She's a parent herself to a rising eighth grader named Maurice. He played Xbox back in his room while his mom and I talked about the city she has worked in for more than a decade and a place she's called home for the past 5 years.
You deal mostly with young people, I imagine, right?
Young, yes.
Okay, so the young people that you deal with, most of whom, just based on the demographics around here, are people of color, right?
Yes.
What do they tell you about their opportunities here?
Basically, that there are none. that if they stay here, they feel trapped, that if they do choose to go to school and pursue a college degree, that there's no guarantee that they will get a job once they, you know, once they graduate. So they opt to leave.
Maurice is 13 years old.
Yes.
He's going to finish high school. I have the sense that you're going to make sure he goes to college,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Okay. When he gets out of college, is it okay with you if he leaves Cleveland and says, see you later?
It's so interesting that you say that, because we've actually been talking about just relocating altogether. He was selected to go to a Young Leaders Conference in Mobile, Alabama. And while he was there, he was able to interact with a lot of young people who were his age, who have gone on to D.C. and have had a lot of opportunities presented to them young. He said to me, we were driving home from Alabama, he said, Mom, he touched me on my shoulder and he said, Mom, you know you're holding me back, right?
Oh, no.
And I looked over at him and I was driving down the highway and I almost literally lost control of the car when he said that to me. And I was like, what do you mean I'm holding you back? And he was like, there's nothing where we live. And it just made my heart sink.
Do you think we can drag him away from his Xbox for 5 minutes?
I think so.
All right, let's do that. Maurice, how are you? I'm Kai. Nice to see you.
Nice to meet you.
How are you doing? You get to sit on the couch, if that's right with you. So your mom was just telling me, I asked her if it's okay with her if when you get out of college, which I'm sure she's going to make sure that you go to, that you put Cleveland in your rearview mirror and never come back. I asked her if that was okay with you. And she told me that you have sort of sensed,
yes, sir,
that you need to get out of here.
Mm. Yes, sir.
Tell me about that.
Well, I want to go into chemistry when I grow up. And people have told me that I have a really brilliant mind and stuff like that, but I just felt like, from my standpoint, I didn't really see any opportunities here. Like, nobody was really doing anything.
What are you, like in eighth grade, ninth grade?
Eighth
grade, all right. So it's a little early yet, and, mm-hmm. and Lord knows there's enough pressure on kids today. But
yeah,
do you know where you want to go to school yet?
Well, I was thinking about going to Harvard.
Oh. Where do you want? Where do you see yourself in like 10 years?
Just anywhere besides here. Like, there's a lot of places that are way better than Cleveland. They have like the little bump sticker, keep Cleveland boring.
Yeah, I've seen it. You don't want boring.
I want something that grabs my attention.
Does it kill you to hear him say that? That there's nothing here for him?
Well, I wouldn't say that it kills me, but it does. It's an aha moment, because he realizes as a 13-year-old that he's not getting the access that he needs here in Cleveland. And if he realizes that as a 13-year-old, then that's like, I mean, beyond me as an adult, that, okay, if my son is saying that, then there has to be some validity to that. I really feel like that there is a system that is put in place to ensure that things remain the same, where everyone is not presented the same opportunity.
A lot of the people we spoke with in Cleveland talked about a system, the way money is funneled into certain places and not into others, the way opportunity exists for some but not for others. Sort of an unspoken conversation about power and money and race and opportunity that feels louder depending on which side of the tracks you're on. And while Cleveland and the Mississippi Delta might feel like an extreme example, the fact is that the national statistics are almost as astonishing. Unemployment in this country is twice as high for Black Americans as it is for whites. 10% of white Americans live below the poverty line, 26% of Blacks. And 7 out of 10 Black children actually wind up worse off than their parents. But maybe not Maurice Fountain. Coming up later this week, as Democrats get ready for their convention in Philadelphia, our reporting continues from Philadelphia as well, just not the one in Pennsylvania. I hope you heard the first part of our reporting from Cleveland, Mississippi. If not, it's online, marketplace.org. All right, this final note on the way out today. We noted a similar thing with the Brits right after the Brexit vote, so a sense of fair play dictates we hold ourselves to a similar standard. Remember how much fun was made here and elsewhere of Brits after that vote for Googling the answer to what is Brexit?
This item from Google Trends today as Republicans gather in Cleveland to pick their nominee for president. Top question, what is the RNC convention? Same thing, I will bet you dollars to donuts, is going to happen next week with the Dems in Philadelphia. And we are out of here. The Dow Industrial is up 16 points today, less than a 10%, 18,533 on the blue chips. The NASDAQ up 27 points, about a half percent, 5,055. The S&P 500 up 5, quarter percent, 2,166. Our daily production team includes Bridget Bodner, Robert Garova, Jenny Josephson, and Daisy Palacios. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM. Who are the winners and losers in today's global economy? How are people's lives and livelihoods affected by their access to political power? Those are some of the questions we're getting at this election season. And now in our new pop-up podcast as well, it's called Politics Inside Out from Marketplace. Get it on iTunes or, obviously, your favorite podcast app.